The hydraulic seals of my diving suit hissed as I adjusted the atmospheric regulators, watching the pressure readings climb steadily on the worn brass gauges. More than 20 years, I'd been working the deep harvests of Thalassa Primaris, and the ritual never changed. Check seals, verify oxygen mix, test the Vox caster connection to the surface platform, then descend into the crushing darkness where the Emperor's bounty waited in the form of protein-rich algae beds that fed half the hive cities in the Segmentum Solar. My name is Marcus Vale, and I've spent more time beneath these black waters than most men spend breathing clean air. The ocean world of Thalassa Primaris produces enough biomass to sustain 3 billion souls across a dozen systems, and every kilogram of that harvest passes through operations like mine. The work pays well enough to keep my hab unit heated and my belly full, but it extracts its price in other ways. The pressure changes had left me with joints that ached during the long winter storms, and my eyes had developed that peculiar squint common to deep sea workers who spend their days peering through murky water at Auspex displays. The Emperor's bounty groaned around me as the ancient vessel prepared for another descent. She was old even by Imperial standards, her hull plates bearing the pitted scars of decades spent battling the corrosive effects of Thalassan seawater. The ship's machine spirit had grown temperamental over the years, requiring constant appeasement through the proper hymnal chants and ritual applications of sacred oils to her cogitator systems. The tech adept who serviced our equipment had warned us that the vessel's Auspex array was operating at 60% efficiency, but replacement parts for a ship this old were rarer than honest arbitrators. I made my way through the cramped corridors toward the control deck, noting how the overhead lumens flickered with each surge of the ship's plasma generators. The air recycling systems wheezed with the strain of keeping 23 crew members supplied with breathable atmosphere while we worked the deep trenches. Everything aboard the Emperor's bounty operated on the edge of acceptable parameters, held together by the Emperor's grace and the stubborn refusal of her crew to acknowledge defeat. The control deck buzzed with activity as my shift prepared for the day's harvest. Jorik Thane, our shift supervisor, hunched over the primary Auspex console, his weathered face illuminated by the sickly green glow of the display screen. The man had been working these waters since before I'd learned to operate a pressure suit, and his instincts for reading the ocean's moods had kept us alive through more than one emergency ascent. Beside him, tech specialist Varn muttered the proper incantations while adjusting the cogitator's input parameters, his augmetic fingers dancing across controls that predated the current millennium. The Auspex display showed our target zone, a series of underwater plateaus approximately 8,000 meters below the surface, where the algae beds grew thickest in the mineral-rich waters that bubbled up from thermal vents. The biomass readings looked promising, suggesting yields that would exceed our monthly quota by a comfortable margin. Such success would earn us all performance bonuses and perhaps even a commendation from the planetary governor's office. Thane gestured for me to approach the console, pointing at a cluster of readings that had appeared along the edge of our scanning range. The signatures were massive, far larger than anything in the Administratum's xenobiological records for Thalassan sea life. The largest indigenous creatures on this world were the kelp sharks, predators that rarely exceeded 15 meters in length, but these readings suggested something nearly 3 times that size moving through the abyssal trenches beyond our normal harvesting zones. The shift supervisor explained that the signatures had first appeared 3 days ago, moving in patterns that seemed almost deliberate rather than the random wandering typical of sea creatures following food sources. The readings were intermittent, appearing for hours at a time before vanishing completely, only to resurface in different locations along the trench system. None of the other harvesting crews had reported similar phenomena, which suggested either equipment malfunction or the presence of something genuinely unknown in the deep waters. Varn completed his ritual preparations and activated the primary descent sequence. The Emperor's bounty shuddered as her ballast tanks flooded with seawater, and the familiar sensation of falling began as we dropped toward the harvest zone. Through the reinforced viewports, I watched the pale morning light of Thalassa Primaris fade to blue, then to black as we descended beyond the reach of the system's primary star. The descent took 47 minutes, during which time the hull creaked and groaned under increasing pressure. At 4,000 meters, one of the secondary AuSpec's displays flickered and died, drawing curses from Varn as he attempted to coax the machine's spirit back to life through the proper rituals. The tech specialist's efforts proved successful, and the display resumed its normal function, though the image quality remained degraded. We reached the harvest zone just as the ship's chronometer chimed the beginning of the work shift. The external lumens activated, casting harsh white beams through the water to illuminate the algae beds that carpeted the seafloor. The sight never failed to impress me, even after decades of harvesting operations. Vast fields of bioluminescent organisms stretched beyond the reach of our lights, their gentle glow creating an otherworldly landscape that seemed to pulse with its own rhythm. The harvesting process began with the deployment of collection drones, small submersibles equipped with specialized cutting tools and storage compartments. I monitored their progress from the control station, watching as they moved through the algae beds with practiced efficiency. The biomass yields were even better than our initial estimates had suggested, with protein content readings that would make the Adeptus Munitorum's nutritional specialists very happy indeed. It was during the third hour of harvesting that we encountered the first anomaly. One of the collection drones, operating near the eastern edge of our designated zone, transmitted images that made no immediate sense. The seafloor in that area was littered with the corpses of sea creatures, dozens of them scattered across the algae beds like the aftermath of some underwater battle. The dead animals included several species I recognized: tunnel rays, deep kelp feeders, and even a few of the smaller kelp sharks that normally avoided our harvesting operations. What disturbed me most about the scene was the condition of the corpses. Each animal showed signs of massive trauma, with bite marks that suggested predation by something far larger than any known thalassan species. The wounds were clean and precise, indicating powerful jaws equipped with razor-sharp teeth. More troubling still was the fact that many of the creatures appeared to have been partially consumed, with specific organs removed, while other portions of the carcasses remained untouched. The drone's cameras captured additional details that violated everything I knew about the ocean's natural order. Several of the corpses showed mutations that had no place in the Emperor's creation: additional limbs, oversized organs, and in one particularly disturbing case, what appeared to be primitive eyes growing along the creature's flanks. These aberrations suggested exposure to some form of contamination, though our water purity sensors showed no unusual readings. Thane ordered the drone to collect samples from several of the corpses, a task that required delicate maneuvering to avoid disturbing the scene too extensively. As the mechanical arms gathered tissue specimens, the AuSpec's display registered movement at the extreme edge of our scanning range. The signatures were massive, consistent with the readings we'd detected over the previous days, but this time they appeared to be moving toward our position rather than following their usual random patterns. The supervisor made the decision to continue harvesting operations while maintaining enhanced sensor watch. Our quotas demanded completion of the biomass collection, and the mysterious signatures remained far enough away to pose no immediate threat to our operations. The collection drones resumed their work, though I noticed that several crew members kept glancing at the AuSpec's displays with obvious unease. As the hours passed, more areas of seafloor carnage came to light. Each new discovery revealed similar scenes of destruction, with corpses showing the same precise bite marks and disturbing mutations. The pattern suggested that whatever was responsible for the deaths had been systematically hunting through the region, targeting specific species, while leaving others completely untouched. The selectivity of the predation was unlike anything in the recorded behavior patterns of known thalassan fauna. The Voxcaster crackled with reports from other sections of the ship as additional crew members observed the spreading field of death. The communications were fragmented due to the aging equipment, but the underlying message was clear. The carnage extended far beyond our initial discovery, covering an area of several square kilometers. Whatever had caused this destruction possessed both the size and intelligence to conduct what appeared to be organized hunting behavior. Near the end of our shift, the primary AuSpec's console registered a new development that sent ice through my veins. The massive signatures that had been tracking along the edge of our scanning range suddenly accelerated, moving with purpose toward our harvesting zone. The reading suggested multiple contacts, each one larger than a kelp shark, approaching from different directions in what looked disturbingly like a coordinated assault pattern. Thane began issuing orders for emergency ascent procedures, while Varn frantically attempted to recall the collection drones before whatever was approaching could reach our position. The Emperor's Bounty's ancient systems responded sluggishly to the commands, her machine's spirit apparently reluctant to abandon the rich harvesting grounds before the day's quota was complete. The last thing I saw before the emergency ascent began was the image from our deepest operating drone, positioned near the thermal vents where the algae grew thickest. Something massive moved through the water beyond the reach of our lights, a shadow against shadows that suggested size and malevolent intelligence. The drone's cameras captured only a glimpse before the feed cut to static, but that brief image would haunt my dreams for weeks to come. The Emperor's Bounty began her ascent toward the surface, leaving behind the scattered corpses and the promise of horrors lurking in the deep trenches of Thalassa Primaris. The emergency ascent procedures had barely begun when the first breach occurred. I was monitoring the ballast control systems when the Emperor's Bounty lurched violently to starboard, her ancient hull plates groaning under stresses that exceeded their design parameters. Through the reinforced viewport, the darkness of the deep water gave way to an explosion of bioluminescent foam as something vast erupted from the abyssal depths below us. The creature that broke the surface was beyond anything in the Administratum's xenobiological records. Its bulk displaced thousands of cubic meters of seawater, creating a surge that lifted our vessel like a child's toy despite her considerable mass. The thing's hide glistened with an oily sheen that reflected our external lumens in patterns that hurt to look at directly. Rows of what appeared to be sensory organs lined its flanks, each one the size of a HAB unit window, pulsing with their own sickly luminescence. The displacement wave struck the nearby Mechanicus blessed harvester platforms with devastating force. Platform Secundus, operated by the Corvani Syndicate, took the brunt of the impact as the surge lifted her entire superstructure clear of the water before slamming it back down. Her blessed cogitator arrays sparked and died as seawater flooded the control compartments, while her crew scrambled to activate emergency beacon protocols. Platform Tertius fared slightly better, though her harvesting arms were twisted beyond repair by the hydraulic forces. I watched in horror as the creature's massive form began to submerge again, its movements deliberate and controlled rather than the panicked thrashing of a surfacing sea animal. The thing had breached intentionally, studying the harvester platforms with those alien sensory organs before disappearing back into the depths. The implications of such behavior sent cold fear through my chest as I realized we were dealing with something that possessed genuine intelligence. The Emperor's Bounty continued her ascent, but our troubles were far from over. The bio-corrosive substances released by the creature's breach had contaminated the surrounding water, and our external sensors began registering chemical compositions that defied classification. The acidic compounds ate through the protective coatings on our diving equipment with frightening speed, forcing Thane to implement emergency surface protocols while the crew began their ritual chants to appease the machine spirits of our failing systems. My own pressure suit's external seals started showing signs of degradation within minutes of exposure to the contaminated water. The blessed rubber compounds that had protected me for years began to dissolve, leaving pitted scars across the suit's surface that compromised its integrity. The atmospheric regulators wheezed as they struggled to maintain proper pressure ratios, their internal mechanisms fouled by the alien chemicals that had somehow penetrated our supposedly sealed systems. Varn worked frantically at his cogitator console, muttering the proper incantations while attempting to compensate for the cascade of equipment failures that plagued our ascent. The primary Auspex array flickered between operational and dead, its machine spirit apparently struggling against some form of interference that originated from the creature's presence. Secondary systems failed in sequence, each one requiring individual attention and ritual purification to restore even minimal functionality. The Vox Caster array suffered the worst damage, its blessed components corroding at an accelerated rate that suggested targeted degradation rather than random chemical exposure. Our communications with the orbital monitoring station became intermittent, with long periods of static punctuated by brief moments of clarity. The few transmissions we managed to receive painted a disturbing picture of coordinated attacks on multiple administratum sanctioned harvesting sites across the Thalassan ocean system. Platform Quartus, operating in the Meridian Trench some 200 kilometers from our position, transmitted a fragmented distress signal that described similar creature breaches occurring in rapid succession. Their final communication spoke of massive forms rising from the deepest parts of the trench, each one targeting specific pieces of equipment with what appeared to be predetermined knowledge of their vulnerabilities. The transmission cut off mid-sentence, leaving only the carrier wave hiss that indicated total communications failure. The harvester crew operating near the thermal gardens reported similar encounters, though their descriptions were even more disturbing. They claimed the creatures were hunting in coordinated groups, with smaller specimens driving prey toward larger predators in patterns that suggested tactical planning. Their emergency beacon activated during the middle of their report, indicating that their vessel had suffered catastrophic damage and was implementing abandoned ship protocols. As we climbed toward the surface, the pattern of attacks became increasingly clear. The creatures were systematically targeting the harvesting operations, striking at multiple sites simultaneously in a campaign that bore all the hallmarks of organized warfare. Each attack focused on destroying the blessed machinery that enabled our biomass collection, while leaving the crews themselves as secondary targets. The selectivity suggested intelligence that had studied our operations extensively before launching these coordinated assaults. The most disturbing aspect of the situation was the creature's apparent ability to adapt their tactics based on our responses. The initial attacks had relied on brute force and surprise, but subsequent reports indicated that the things were learning from each encounter. They began targeting our communications equipment first, isolating each platform before moving in for the final assault. They also demonstrated knowledge of our emergency protocols, positioning themselves to intercept escape routes and rescue vessels. My own observations of the creature that had breached near our position supported these troubling conclusions. The thing had not simply erupted from the depths in blind aggression, but had carefully positioned itself to maximize damage to the surrounding platforms while minimizing its own exposure to our defensive capabilities. Its sensory organs had tracked our movements with obvious intelligence, cataloging our responses for future reference. The biocorrosive substances it had released were equally sophisticated, targeting specific materials used in imperial construction while leaving others relatively untouched. The compounds showed particular effectiveness against the blessed alloys used in cogitator components and vox caster arrays, suggesting that the creature possessed detailed knowledge of our technological vulnerabilities. Such precision could not be attributed to random biological processes. As we approached the halfway point of our ascent, the contamination effects began spreading throughout the Emperor's bounty systems. The water recycling apparatus started producing atmosphere that tasted of metal and decay, forcing us to rely on emergency oxygen reserves that were never intended for extended use. The hull integrity sensors registered microfractures appearing along stress points that had remained solid for decades, as if the alien chemicals were attacking the very molecular bonds that held our vessel together. The navigation system suffered cascading failures that left us dependent on manual calculations and dead reckoning to maintain our ascent trajectory. Without the blessed guidance of the ship's machine spirit, we risked surfacing in the wrong location or worse, ascending too rapidly and suffering decompression damage to both crew and equipment. Varn's chanted litanies grew more desperate as he attempted to coax life from systems that seemed determined to die. The creature's hunting pattern revealed itself through the scattered reports from other harvesting operations. It was not randomly attacking targets of opportunity, but systematically dismantling the entire biomass collection network that supplied the hive cities of three different star systems. The thing understood the strategic importance of our operations and was methodically destroying our capability to maintain food production quotas. More troubling still was the evidence that it was learning from each successful attack. The early assaults had been crude affairs, relying on overwhelming force to destroy the harvesting platforms. But the later reports described increasingly sophisticated tactics, with the creatures using the ocean's natural features to mask their approach and timing their attacks to coincide with shift changes when our defensive readiness was at its lowest. The orbital monitoring station's final coherent transmission confirmed my worst fears about the scope of the threat we faced. The creatures were not isolated specimens, but part of a larger population that had remained hidden in the deepest trenches of Thalassa Primaris until something had triggered their emergence. The attack pattern suggested a level of organization that bordered on military precision, with different groups of creatures assigned to specific targets based on their strategic value. Our own ascent continued through increasingly contaminated water, with each meter of progress requiring greater effort from our failing systems. The Emperor's Bounty's machine spirit seemed to be fighting a losing battle against the alien chemicals that had invaded her sacred mechanisms. Warning lights flickered across every control panel, indicating failures in systems that had operated flawlessly for decades. The pressure readings on my diving suit continued to deteriorate, forcing me to constantly adjust the atmospheric regulators to maintain breathable conditions. The biocorrosive substances had penetrated deeper into the suit systems than I had initially realized, attacking components that should have been completely sealed against external contamination. The implications for the rest of the crew were deeply troubling, as their equipment showed similar signs of degradation. Through the chaos of failing systems and emergency procedures, one fact emerged with terrifying clarity. We were facing an intelligent enemy that had spent considerable time studying our operations before launching its coordinated assault. The creatures possessed both the physical capability and tactical sophistication necessary to destroy the entire biomass harvesting infrastructure of Thalassa Primaris, threatening the food security of billions of Imperial citizens across multiple star systems. The Emperor's Bounty shuddered to a halt 3 kilometers below the surface, her ancient propulsion systems falling silent with a grinding wheeze that spoke of catastrophic mechanical failure. I felt the deck plates vibrate beneath my boots as emergency power kicked in, bathing the control compartment in the hellish red glow of backup lumens. The creature's biocorrosive discharge had done more than contaminate our external systems. It had eaten through the primary drive manifolds like acid through parchment. Varn hunched over his cogitator console, sweat beading on his forehead as he attempted to diagnose the extent of the damage. His augmetic fingers moved across the blessed controls with increasing desperation, coaxing responses from machine spirits that seemed intent on abandoning their sacred duties. The diagnostic readings painted a grim picture. The main plasma conduits had suffered complete molecular breakdown, while the secondary thrust vectoring systems showed signs of structural collapse that would take weeks to repair even with a full tech adept crew. The atmospheric recycling systems wheezed and coughed as they struggled to process air that tasted increasingly of metal and decay. Each breath carried the bitter tang of corroded components and failing filters, a constant reminder that our life support capabilities were degrading with each passing hour. The emergency oxygen reserves would sustain us for perhaps 6 days at current consumption rates, assuming no additional system failures compromised our ability to maintain breathable atmosphere. Thane moved between the various control stations with the methodical precision of a man who had survived 3 decades of deep-sea emergencies. His weathered face showed no emotion as he assessed our situation, but I caught the slight tightening around his eyes that indicated he understood the gravity of our predicament. The shift supervisor began implementing isolation protocols, sealing off damaged sections of the ship while redistributing power to essential systems. The first signs of behavioral changes appeared during the second hour of our enforced drift. Korvac, one of our senior harvester operators, began exhibiting symptoms that defied easy explanation. The man had always been steady and reliable, but now he paced the corridors with obvious agitation, muttering under his breath about sounds that none of the rest of us could hear. His eyes had developed a peculiar intensity that made direct conversation uncomfortable. The ship's Medicaid servitor registered elevated stress hormones in several crew members during routine atmospheric monitoring, but its diagnostic capabilities were limited by decades of wear and minimal maintenance. The ancient machine could detect basic physiological changes, but lacked the sophisticated sensors necessary to identify exotic pathogens or alien contamination. Its mechanical voice droned through status reports that revealed little beyond the obvious fact that the crew was experiencing unprecedented levels of psychological pressure. Jorik Thane's condition deteriorated more rapidly than the others, though the changes were subtle enough that I initially attributed them to the stress of command during a crisis situation. The shift supervisor had always been prone to making quick decisions based on instinct rather than extended deliberation, but his behavior was becoming increasingly erratic. He issued contradictory orders regarding power distribution, then became aggressively defensive when questioned about the logic behind his choices. The contamination seemed to affect different crew members in distinct ways, suggesting that whatever pathogen the creature had introduced was adapting to individual physiological characteristics. Voss, our primary atmospheric technician, developed an obsessive fixation on the air recycling systems that went far beyond normal professional concern. He spent hours staring at the filtration displays, claiming to detect patterns in the data that indicated imminent catastrophic failure. My own condition remained stable, though I found myself constantly evaluating the behavior of my crewmates for signs of the spreading contamination. The isolation of our situation made every interaction fraught with uncertainty, as I struggled to determine which crew members could still be trusted to perform their duties without compromising our collective survival. The confined space of the Emperor's Bounty amplified every tension and suspicion. The external threat continued to manifest through our failing sensor arrays, which detected massive movements in the water surrounding our vessel. The creatures appeared to be circling our position with deliberate patience, maintaining a distance that kept them just beyond the range of our most powerful lumens. Their hunting patterns suggested they understood our vulnerability and were content to wait while our systems continued their inexorable degradation. The AuSpex displays flickered between operational and dead, showing intermittent readings that painted a disturbing picture of organized predatory behavior. Multiple large contacts moved through the water in coordinated formations, occasionally approaching close enough to register on our passive sensors before retreating to their previous positions. The pattern resembled a siege rather than random predation, with the creatures maintaining constant surveillance while avoiding direct confrontation. Harvester Korvac's condition worsened throughout the third day of our isolation, his agitation escalating to levels that threatened the safety of the entire crew. The man claimed to hear voices emanating from the ship's hull, describing conversations in languages that predated human settlement of Thalassa Primaris. His accounts of these auditory hallucinations grew increasingly detailed and disturbing, featuring descriptions of underwater cities and alien technologies that had no basis in Imperial records. The Medicae servitor's attempts to sedate Korvac proved ineffective, as the man's metabolism seemed to be processing pharmaceutical compounds at an accelerated rate that rendered standard dosages useless. The machine recommended restraint protocols, but implementing such measures in our current situation would require crew members who might themselves be compromised by whatever pathogen was spreading through our ranks. Voss's obsession with the atmospheric systems reached dangerous levels when he began making unauthorized modifications to the filtration arrays. The technician claimed that the standard Imperial configurations were inadequate to handle the exotic contamination that had infiltrated our vessel, requiring adjustments that violated established maintenance protocols. His modifications actually improved air quality in some compartments, which raised troubling questions about the nature of his apparent expertise. The power distribution system suffered cascading failures as corroded components reached critical degradation thresholds. Emergency batteries designed to provide backup power for essential systems began showing signs of premature discharge, their blessed chemical reactions disrupted by contamination that had somehow penetrated supposedly sealed compartments. The Emperor's Bounty was slowly dying around us, her machine's spirit succumbing to alien influences that defied every protective ritual and blessed ward. Thane's leadership became increasingly erratic as the isolation continued, with the shift supervisor issuing orders that seemed designed more to assert his authority than address our practical survival needs. He established arbitrary duty rotations that separated crew members who had worked together for years, claiming that such measures were necessary to prevent the spread of contamination. His explanations for these decisions grew more paranoid and less coherent with each passing day. The creatures outside our vessel demonstrated increasing boldness as our defensive capabilities continued to deteriorate. Passive sonar detected impacts against the hull that suggested deliberate testing of our structural integrity, with the things probing for weak points that might allow them access to our interior compartments. The sounds of their movements through the water carried an almost mechanical rhythm that spoke of intelligence and purpose. My faith in the Emperor's protection provided the only constant anchor in the growing chaos of our situation. The crew members who showed the most severe behavioral changes also seemed to have abandoned their devotional practices, spending less time in prayer and more time obsessing over technical details or imagined threats. The correlation was too consistent to be coincidental, suggesting that spiritual discipline provided some measure of protection against whatever influence was spreading through our ranks. The water recycling systems began producing increasingly questionable output, with filtration arrays that should have removed all contaminants allowing through substances that registered as unknown on our analysis equipment. The blessed purification rituals that had maintained water quality for decades seemed powerless against contamination that operated on principles beyond imperial understanding. Each sip of recycled water carried the risk of further exposure to whatever pathogen was transforming my crewmates. Emergency rations showed signs of contamination despite being stored in sealed compartments that should have been completely isolated from external influences. The blessed preservatives that kept our food supplies stable during extended voyages were breaking down at an accelerated rate, producing chemical byproducts that triggered the Medicaid servitors' contamination warnings. Our nutritional security was compromised along with every other aspect of our survival capabilities. The Emperor's bounty continued her slow drift through the abyssal depths of Thalassa Primaris, carrying her crew deeper into isolation and despair, while alien predators maintained their patient vigil in the surrounding darkness. Each passing hour brought new system failures and fresh evidence that whatever had contaminated our vessel was systematically dismantling our ability to survive in the hostile environment of the deep ocean. The distinction between external and internal threats became increasingly meaningless as crew members exhibited behaviors that posed direct risks to our collective survival, while the creatures outside demonstrated tactical patience that suggested they understood our deteriorating condition better than we did ourselves. The AuSpex readings that appeared on our failing displays during the fourth day of isolation changed everything I thought I understood about our situation. The massive signatures we had been tracking were not isolated predators, but part of something far more terrifying. Varn managed to coax enough power from the dying sensor array to conduct a deep-range scan, and what we discovered in the abyssal trenches beneath us defied every assumption about the natural order of Thalassa Primaris. The deepest parts of the ocean floor teemed with movement. Hundreds of contacts, each one representing a creature larger than anything in the Imperial xenobiological records, were rising from trenches that plunged beyond the reach of our most sophisticated scanning equipment. The things moved in organized formations that spoke of collective intelligence, their ascent coordinated across multiple trench systems that spanned thousands of kilometers of ocean floor. I watched the display readings with growing horror as the scope of the threat became clear. These were not random predators driven to the surface by hunger or territorial disputes. The creatures were conducting a systematic emergence from the deepest parts of Thalassa Primaris, rising from depths where no human had ever ventured, and where the crushing pressure should have prevented the existence of anything larger than microscopic organisms. The biosignatures registered by our sensors indicated metabolic processes that operated on principles completely alien to imperial understanding of marine biology. The creatures consumed vast quantities of organic matter, but their digestive systems seemed designed to extract specific compounds rather than simple nutritional sustenance. The pattern suggested they were harvesting particular biochemical components from their prey, possibly for purposes that went far beyond basic survival needs. Voss approached me during the morning shift with information that made my blood run cold. The atmospheric technician had been analyzing the contamination patterns in our life support systems, and his findings painted a disturbing picture of coordinated biological warfare. The substances released by the creature that had breached near our position were not random toxins, but precisely engineered compounds designed to target specific aspects of Imperial technology and human physiology. The contamination showed particular effectiveness against the blessed alloys used in cogitator components and atmospheric processing equipment, suggesting that whatever intelligence guided these creatures possessed detailed knowledge of human manufacturing processes. The biocorrosive agents attacked molecular bonds in ways that seemed almost surgical in their precision, dismantling our technology while leaving organic materials relatively untouched. More disturbing was Voss's discovery that the contamination was actively adapting to our countermeasures. Each attempt to purify our atmosphere or neutralize the alien compounds resulted in the emergence of new variants that circumvented our defensive protocols. The pathogen was learning from our responses, evolving countermeasures that demonstrated intelligence beyond anything documented in Imperial xenobiological studies. The behavioral changes affecting my crewmates accelerated during the fifth day of our isolation, with several men exhibiting symptoms that suggested fundamental alterations to their basic physiology. Korvac had developed patches of scaled skin along his arms and neck, while his eyes had taken on a reflective quality that reminded me uncomfortably of deep sea creatures adapted to low light environments. The man's breathing had become labored, as if his respiratory system was struggling to process standard atmospheric mixtures. Thane's condition proved even more alarming, as the shift supervisor began demonstrating knowledge that he could not possibly have acquired through normal means. The man spoke with disturbing familiarity about the thermal vent systems that powered the deep ocean ecosystem, describing geological processes and mineral compositions that would have required years of specialized study to understand. His explanations of the creature's behavior patterns showed insights that seemed to come from direct communication rather than observation. The Medicae servitor registered physiological changes in affected crew members that defied its diagnostic capabilities. Heart rates had stabilized at levels that should have indicated severe stress, but the men showed no signs of fatigue or cardiovascular strain. Lung capacity measurements suggested adaptations that would allow for extended periods without atmospheric support, while muscle density readings indicated strength improvements that bordered on the superhuman. The transformation process appeared to be irreversible, with each passing day bringing more pronounced changes to the affected crew members. Their skin developed a waxy texture that seemed designed to resist pressure differentials, while their fingers showed signs of webbing between the digits. Most disturbing was the way their behavior patterns shifted to favor group activities over individual tasks, as if they were developing some form of collective consciousness. I began to suspect that the contamination was not simply a pathogen, but a form of biological integration system designed to incorporate human subjects into the creature's alien hierarchy. The affected crew members showed increasing deference to the massive forms circling our vessel, spending hours pressed against the hull plates, as if listening to communications that the rest of us could not perceive. The Emperor's bounty continued to deteriorate around us, her blessed system succumbing to contamination that seemed to target the very foundations of Imperial technology. The machine spirits that had guided our vessel for decades grew increasingly unresponsive to traditional appeasement rituals, as if the alien influence was severing their connection to the Omnissiah's divine guidance. Warning lights flickered across control panels in patterns that resembled some form of coded communication rather than random system failures. My attempts to maintain contact with the orbital monitoring station proved increasingly futile as our Vox caster array suffered cascading failures. The few transmissions I managed to receive painted a terrifying picture of planetary-scale catastrophe, with harvesting operations across three continents reporting similar creature emergences. The Things were not limiting their assault to our local area, but were conducting coordinated attacks on every major biomass collection facility on Thalassa Primaris. The implications for the broader Imperium were staggering. Thalassa Primaris supplied protein supplements to over 40 hive worlds across 6 different star systems, feeding populations that numbered in the hundreds of billions. The destruction of our harvesting infrastructure would trigger famine conditions that could destabilize entire sectors, creating refugee crises and resource wars that would stretch Imperial military capabilities beyond their limits. The creatures demonstrated their understanding of this strategic vulnerability through the precision of their attacks. Rather than simply destroying our facilities through brute force, they were systematically eliminating our ability to maintain the complex supply chains that kept the biomass flowing to dependent worlds. Each assault targeted specific components of the harvesting infrastructure, suggesting detailed reconnaissance and tactical planning that spanned months or possibly years. The emergency beacon system represented our only remaining hope of external rescue, but reaching the transmission array would require navigating through water that teemed with the alien predators. The beacon was located in the Emperor's Bounty's upper superstructure, accessible only through maintenance shafts that had been flooded during our emergency descent. The journey would require pressure suit operation in an environment contaminated by biocorrosive agents that had already demonstrated their ability to dissolve Imperial equipment. I spent hours studying the ship's technical schematics, searching for alternate routes that might allow access to the beacon without extended exposure to the contaminated water. The Emperor's Bounty's ancient design included several redundant pathways through her superstructure, but most had been sealed decades ago during routine maintenance operations. The few remaining options would require swimming through flooded compartments while carrying emergency oxygen supplies and hoping that my pressure suit's integrity would hold long enough to complete the mission. The affected crew members began exhibiting behaviors that suggested they were actively working to prevent our escape from the vessel. Korvac positioned himself near the equipment lockers that contained our emergency diving gear, while Thane established patrol patterns that effectively blocked access to the upper deck maintenance shafts. Their actions appeared coordinated despite the absence of any obvious communication between them, as if they were responding to directives from an external intelligence. The creatures outside our vessel seemed to understand our desperation, increasing the frequency of their hull impacts in what appeared to be psychological warfare designed to increase our stress levels. The sounds of their movements through the water carried rhythmic patterns that reminded me of the ritual chants used in Imperial devotional services, though the alien cadences produced feelings of dread rather than spiritual comfort. My faith in the Emperor's protection became the only constant in the growing chaos of our situation. The crew members who maintained their devotional practices showed greater resistance to the contamination effects, while those who abandoned their spiritual disciplines succumbed more rapidly to the alien influence. I began reciting the litany of protection during each shift, finding that the familiar words helped maintain mental clarity in the face of mounting psychological pressure. The water recycling systems finally failed completely during the 6th day, forcing us to rely on emergency reserves that would last perhaps 2 more days at current consumption rates. The blessed purification rituals that had maintained our water supply for decades proved powerless against contamination that operated on principles beyond Imperial understanding. Each remaining drop of clean water became precious beyond measure as we faced the prospect of dehydration in the middle of an ocean. The power distribution grid suffered its final cascade failure as corroded components reached critical degradation thresholds. Emergency lighting flickered and died throughout large sections of the ship, leaving us dependent on portable lumens that cast harsh shadows through compartments that had never been designed for such primitive illumination. The Emperor's Bounty was dying around us, her machine spirit finally succumbing to alien influences that had systematically dismantled every protective ward and blessed component. The emergency beacon represented our final hope of salvation, but reaching it would require swimming through contaminated water while alien predators maintained their patient vigil in the surrounding darkness. The journey would test not only my physical capabilities, but my faith in the Emperor's protection. As I prepared to venture into an environment where human technology had already proven inadequate against the alien threat that rose from the deepest trenches of Thalassa Primaris. The emergency beacon's transmission array lay 40 meters above my current position, accessible only through maintenance shafts that had been flooded with contaminated seawater for the past 6 days. I studied the Emperor's Bounty's technical schematics one final time, tracing the route through her ancient superstructure while the ship continued her slow death around me. The portable lumens cast harsh shadows across the parchment diagrams, their dying power cells another reminder that time was running out for both the vessel and her crew. My pressure suit had deteriorated significantly since our initial exposure to the creature's biocorrosive discharge, its blessed seals pitted and scarred by alien chemicals that continued eating through Imperial materials with relentless efficiency. The atmospheric regulators wheezed with each breath cycle, their internal mechanisms fouled by contamination that had somehow penetrated systems designed to operate in the most hostile environments imaginable. The suit would hold together long enough for one final dive, but extended exposure to the contaminated water would certainly prove fatal. The affected crew members maintained their positions throughout the ship's corridors, blocking access routes with a coordination that suggested external guidance rather than conscious planning. Korvac stood near the equipment lockers, his scaled skin glistening with moisture that seemed to seep from his pores, while his reflective eyes tracked my movements with predatory intensity. Thane had positioned himself at the primary maintenance shaft entrance, his transformed physiology allowing him to remain motionless for hours without showing signs of fatigue or discomfort. I gathered the emergency oxygen canisters from their blessed storage compartments, noting how the sacred seals had begun to corrode despite being manufactured from materials that should have resisted any known chemical agent. The portable breathing apparatus would provide perhaps 30 minutes of clean air, assuming the contamination had not already compromised its internal filtration systems. The margin for error was non-existent, but the alternative was waiting for our remaining life support systems to fail completely. The journey through the flooded maintenance shafts began in near total darkness, with only the fading glow of my suit's emergency lumens to illuminate the way forward. The contaminated water pressed against my failing seals with crushing pressure that spoke of depths far greater than our current position should have allowed. Something about the alien contamination was affecting the basic physics of our environment, creating pressure differentials that defied every principle of underwater engineering. The first maintenance junction revealed evidence of the creature's presence within the ship itself. Organic growths covered the bulkhead surfaces, their bioluminescent patterns pulsing in rhythms that seemed to respond to my movements through the water. The growths appeared to be feeding on the blessed alloys that formed the Emperor's Bounty's internal structure, dissolving metal components that had withstood decades of deep ocean service without showing signs of wear. My progress through the flooded passages became increasingly difficult as the contaminated water began affecting my suit's mobility systems. The servo motors that assisted with movement under pressure started responding sluggishly to my commands, their blessed mechanisms struggling against corrosion that attacked the molecular bonds holding their components together. Each meter of forward progress required greater effort as the alien chemicals continued their relentless assault on Imperial technology. The secondary maintenance shaft contained horrors that challenged my understanding of biological processes. Partially dissolved crew members floated in the contaminated water, their bodies transformed into something that existed between human and alien physiology. The transformation had progressed far beyond what I had observed in the affected survivors, creating hybrid forms that retained human skeletal structure while incorporating features that belonged to deep-sea predators. The organic matter that had once been my crewmates showed signs of continued biological activity despite the obvious trauma of their dissolution. Gill slits opened and closed along their necks in rhythm with some alien respiratory cycle, while their eyes had developed the reflective membranes common to creatures adapted for abyssal hunting. The sight filled me with revulsion and terror, but also provided crucial insight into the ultimate fate that awaited anyone exposed to the contamination for extended periods. The emergency beacon's control chamber lay just beyond the final maintenance junction, its blessed cogitator system still showing signs of minimal power despite the cascade failures that had claimed most of the ship's other equipment. The transmission array's machine spirit seemed to be resisting the alien contamination more effectively than other systems, possibly due to the additional protective wards that safeguarded emergency communication equipment. The Emperor's protection might still allow me to send a warning to the orbital monitoring station. I activated the beacon's primary transmission protocols while my oxygen reserves dwindled toward critical levels. The cogitator's display screens flickered to life, showing communication channels that connected to Imperial Navy vessels stationed throughout the Thalassa system. The emergency frequencies remained clear despite the interference that had plagued our other communication attempts, suggesting that the beacon's blessed components were powerful enough to overcome the alien jamming effects. The message I composed contained everything I had learned about the creatures and their coordinated assault on the biomass harvesting infrastructure. The things were not random predators, but part of an organized intelligence that had studied human operations extensively before launching their attacks. They possessed biological weapons capable of dissolving Imperial technology while transforming human subjects into hybrid forms that served their alien purposes. The threat extended far beyond Thalassa Primaris, representing a danger to the food security of entire sectors. The transmission process required several minutes to encode the full scope of my report into formats that could be received by Imperial Navy communication systems. The beacon's cogitator worked methodically through the data compression algorithms while my suit's atmospheric reserves reached dangerously low levels. The contaminated water continued its assault on my equipment, with new lakes appearing in seals that should have maintained their integrity for hours under normal conditions. The creatures outside the ship seemed to sense my activities within the beacon chamber, increasing the frequency of their impacts against the hull in what appeared to be an attempt to disrupt my transmission. The sounds of their movements through the water carried new urgency, as if they understood that my communication with Imperial forces represented a direct threat to their strategic objectives. Their intelligence was far greater than I had initially suspected, encompassing not only tactical awareness but strategic thinking that spanned multiple star systems. My report included detailed observations of the contamination effects and their impact on both human physiology and Imperial technology. The biocorrosive agents were specifically engineered to target the blessed alloys and sacred components that formed the foundation of human civilization, suggesting that the creatures possessed knowledge of our manufacturing processes that could only have been acquired through extensive reconnaissance. The implications for Imperial security were staggering, as the aliens had demonstrated the ability to neutralize our technological advantages through biological warfare. The transmission array's power levels fluctuated wildly as the contamination reached critical systems within the beacon chamber. Warning indicators flashed across the cogitator displays, showing cascade failures that threatened to terminate my communication before the message could reach Imperial receivers. The machine spirit was fighting a losing battle against alien influences that seemed designed specifically to sever our connection to the broader Imperium. I managed to complete the primary data transmission just as my oxygen reserves reached critical depletion levels. The beacon's cogitator confirmed successful transmission to three separate Imperial Navy vessels, including the heavy cruiser Righteous Fury, stationed at the system's primary naval base. The message would reach Fleet Command within hours, providing them with intelligence that could prevent the creatures from expanding their assault beyond Thalassa Primaris. The return journey through the flooded maintenance shafts became a nightmare of failing equipment and diminishing consciousness, as my suit's life support systems finally succumbed to the contamination. The blessed atmospheric processors wheezed their final breaths while alien chemicals ate through filtration systems that had been sanctified by tech priests decades earlier. Each breath brought contaminated air that tasted of metal and decay, carrying with it the promise of transformation into something no longer human. The organic growths within the ship's passages had expanded during my absence, creating a living network that pulsed with bioluminescent patterns resembling some form of communication system. The growth seemed to be converting the Emperor's Bounty's internal structure into something that served the creature's purposes, transforming our vessel into a hybrid of Imperial engineering and alien biology. The ship was becoming something other than human, just as her crew had been transformed by exposure to the contamination. I reached the main corridor system as my suit's power cells finally died, leaving me dependent on emergency chemical lumens that cast flickering shadows through passages that no longer resembled the familiar interior of an Imperial vessel. The affected crew members had abandoned their guard positions, possibly drawn away by some alien imperative that I could not perceive. Their absence provided a brief respite, but I knew that my own transformation would begin soon as the contaminated air filled my lungs with each labored breath. The Emperor's Bounty shuddered around me as something massive impacted her hull from below, the collision powerful enough to buckle deck plates that had withstood decades of deep ocean pressure. Through the failing lumens, I caught glimpses of water fountaining through new breaches in the hull, carrying with it the promise of final submersion. The creatures had grown tired of waiting for our vessel to die naturally and were taking direct action to complete her destruction. The largest of the alien forms began its ascent from the abyssal depths, its massive bulk displacing millions of cubic meters of seawater as it rose toward our crippled vessel. The thing's approach created pressure waves that traveled through the ocean floor, triggering seismic disturbances that registered on our dying sensor, arrays as readings that exceeded their maximum parameters. This was the creature that commanded the others, the intelligence that had orchestrated the systematic assault on human civilization. I made my way toward the ship's primary observation deck, driven by a need to witness the final confrontation between human engineering and alien intelligence. The creature's form became visible through the reinforced viewports as it approached the surface, its hide scarred by pressure and time, marked with bioluminescent patterns that spoke of intelligence older than human civilization. The thing's sensory organs focused on our vessel with obvious recognition, studying the Emperor's Bounty as a predator studies wounded prey. The water around the creature boiled with smaller forms that served as its escort, each one larger than the kelp sharks that had once been the apex predators of Thalassan waters. The aliens moved with coordinated precision that spoke of collective intelligence, their formations designed to maximize the psychological impact of their emergence while preventing any possibility of escape. They had learned from their encounters with human technology and were taking no chances with their final assault. My transmission to Imperial Command represented the only victory I could claim in this confrontation between human ambition and alien intelligence. The creatures might destroy Thalassa Primaris and transform its population into hybrid servants, but they would face Imperial Navy battlefleets armed with knowledge of their capabilities and tactics. The Emperor's protection had allowed my warning to reach the broader Imperium, ensuring that humanity would not face this threat unprepared. The massive creature broke the surface directly beneath the Emperor's Bounty, its emergence creating a displacement wave that lifted our vessel clear of the water before slamming her back down with crushing force. The impact shattered what remained of our hull integrity, flooding the lower compartments with contaminated seawater that carried the promise of final transformation. The ship's machine spirit released its final breath as alien influences severed its connection to the Omnissiah's divine guidance. I felt the contamination entering my bloodstream as the Emperor's Bounty began her final descent toward the abyssal depths of Thalassa Primaris. The transformation would claim me as it had claimed my crewmates, but my warning had reached Imperial forces in time to prevent a sector-wide catastrophe. The creatures had won this battle, but they would face the full might of the Emperor's wrath when the Imperial Navy arrived to cleanse these waters of their alien presence. The darkness of the deep ocean closed around me as consciousness faded, carrying with it the knowledge that billions of loyal Imperial citizens would continue to receive their daily bread, because one man had chosen duty over survival in the crushing depths where humanity's dominion was challenged by intelligences that mocked the Emperor's creation.